Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
I've always thought of Passover as a celebration of liberation, and liberation can never be just the Jews, because there's nothing free about being by yourself in some sort of country in battle. The only way to fight for liberation is to fight for everybody, and in this case, the Palestinians.
On the third evening of the Jewish holiday of Passover, Jewish Voice for Peace holds a protest seder outside the New York immigration offices after ICE sees another Palestinian Columbia University student with a green card. Meanwhile, President Trump met with Salvadoran President Nayib Bukele as Trump defies a Supreme Court order to return a Maryland resident wrongly deported to El Salvador. We'll get an excerpt of the meeting, along with response, and an update on the elections in Ecuador, where business magnate Daniel Noboa was re-elected president, his challenger contesting the results. Then to the dark money game.
Supreme Court rolled back rules on campaign finance.
Citizens United said corporations can create a super PAC.
Now, corporations could fund elections with unlimited amounts of cash.
One way you could look at it is that it's a fair fight. Another way is that both parties are corrupt.
When it comes to the power of big business, the fix seems to be in.
We'll speak with director Alex Gibney of the HBO two-part series that premieres tonight. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Trump administration stepped up its defiance of a Supreme Court order to return a Maryland father removed to El Salvador as a result of what Trump officials called an administrative error. Kilmar Abrego Garcia was illegally transferred from the U.S. on March 15th and imprisoned without due process inside SECAT, the notorious Salvadoran megaprison known for torture and other human rights abuses. On Monday, President Trump welcomed the Salvadoran leader, Nayib Bukele, to the Oval Office in the White House to personally thank him for accepting some 300 people flown out of the U.S. since mid-March, Abrego Garcia among them. Speaking to reporters from the Oval Office, Bukele, who's called himself the world's coolest dictator, said he doesn't have the power to release Abrego Garcia.
I don't have the power to return him to the United States.
But you could release him inside El Salvador.
Yeah, but I'm not releasing. I mean, we're not very fond of releasing terrorists into our country. We just turned the murder capital of the world to the safest country in the Western Hemisphere, and you want us to go back into the releasing criminals so we can go back to being the murder capital of the world? No, that's not going to happen.
During Monday's meeting, President Trump said he wants to transfer some violent criminals who are U.S. citizens to El Salvador, adding Attorney General Pam Bondi's, quote, studying the law. Trump was caught on a hot mic telling Bukele, quote, homegrown criminals are next, adding, quote, you're going to need about five more places, unquote. In Maryland, protesters marched through downtown Baltimore Monday.
This could happen to anyone. I mean, we need to worry about Kilmar Abrego Garcia. But if he can be disappeared into a prison like this, just taken off the street by an administrative error, that could happen to any citizen. That could happen to any person. And President Trump would just say, oh, I can't do it. So I believe that fascism is here in America. I don't believe there is the rule of law anymore. And I think everybody needs to wake up and get out in the streets.
We'll have more on the deportations and removals of immigrants from the United States after headlines. President Trump's ordered the military to take control of a narrow strip of the U.S.-Mexico border spanning some 2,000 non-contiguous miles from the Pacific Ocean to New Mexico. The land transfers, an attempt by the Trump administration to skirt federal law prohibiting U.S. troops from being used in domestic law enforcement, including as immigration agents. Meanwhile, the ACLU reports the Trump administration's planning to dramatically expand immigrant detention facilities, including opening new immigration prisons in 10 states across the Midwest and West Coast. The plans were brought to life thanks to a Freedom of Information Act request. In a statement, the ACLU warned the expansion would, quote, further the Trump administration's dystopian plans to deport our immigrant neighbors and loved ones, unquote. Last week, the New York Times reported ICE is requesting new contracts worth $45 billion for for-profit prison companies, including Geo Group and CoreCivic, for the construction and operation of new jails. Immigration authorities Monday detained Columbia student Mohsen Mahdawi, a green card holder from Palestine. He was arrested in Vermont when he appeared for what he was told would be a naturalization test. Mahdawi had previously expressed fears the appointment, which came earlier than usual in the typical naturalization process, could end up being a trap, and made contact with Vermont's three members of Congress to notify them of his concerns. All three condemned his detention on Monday. Like Mahmoud Khalil, Mohsen Mahdawi helped lead Columbia University campus protests against Israel's assault on Gaza. He was interviewed on 60 Minutes in December 2023.
To be anti-Semitic is unjust. Is unjust. And the fight for the freedom of Palestine and the fight against anti-Semitism go hand in hand, because injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Here in New York, hundreds of members of Jewish Voice for Peace and others protested outside the offices of Immigration and Customs Enforcement Monday in Foley Square, the third night of the Jewish holiday of Passover, as alarm spread over the seizure of Mohsen Mahdawi.
My name is Bridget Bissonette, and I have a great deal of family that means a great deal to me, who are Jewish. And, you know, the Jewish principles are very much about liberation for all people, and that this is a movement, and this is not a movement that we could be deporting. This is not a movement that involves hate. This is not a movement that involves violence. So Passover is about the liberation of people, and we stand here for all people to say, not ever again, not anyone.
The Trump administration said it's freezing $2.2 billion in federal grants and $60 million in contracts to Harvard University after the Ivy League institution defied Trump's order to eliminate all DEI initiatives and further crack down on Palestinian rights protests, including reporting international students to federal authorities. Harvard President Alan Garber wrote in a letter to the school community Monday, quote, the university will not surrender its independence or relinquish its constitutional rights. No government, regardless of which party is in power, should dictate what private universities can teach, whom they can admit and hire, and which areas of study and inquiry they can pursue, he wrote. In Gaza, Palestinian health officials say the confirmed death toll from Israel's assault has topped 51,000. More than 10,000 others are missing under the rubble and presumed dead. Over the past 24 hours, Israeli attacks killed at least 17 Palestinians and wounded 69 others. Among the dead are displaced children and parents who were blown up as they sheltered in tents in the Al-Mawasi area of Khan Yunis.
At around exactly midnight, a missile fell on this tent where women and children were sheltering. We were surprised when it hit. There are a number of martyrs, children and women, from the tents. This area was considered safe based on the instructions of the Israeli army, but we were surprised to find that this area is not safe. There is no safe place in the Gaza Strip.
Earlier today, negotiators with Hamas said they're looking at a ceasefire proposal submitted by Israel to Egyptian and Qatari mediators that includes new demands for Hamas to disarm. A Hamas spokesperson told Al Jazeera that demand was, quote, not acceptable to even hear, unquote. In Sudan's western Darfur region, the UN reports attacks by the paramilitary rapid support forces killed at least 300 people in refugee camps over the weekend. The victims included children as well as 10 humanitarian aid workers from Relief International Sudan. The RSF claimed on Sunday it took control of Zamzam camp. Some 400,000 additional people are believed to have been displaced in the area just over the last few days. The surrounding area of El Fasher is in the midst of a famine affecting some 637,000 people. Today marks 2 years since the devastating civil war erupted between the Sudanese army and the RSF. Aid groups are warning of a spiraling humanitarian disaster with some 13 million forcibly displaced, widespread reports of sexual and ethnically motivated violence and worsening hunger crisis. This is Sean Hughes of the World Food Program.
All these challenges are coming at a time when resources for humanitarian response globally are reducing. We know that it is not possible to stop a famine with food alone. You need healthcare, you need water, you need sanitation. So the whole response needs to be well supported in order to be able to turn this around and stem the tide of famine.
Foreign ministers are gathering in London today to discuss a diplomatic path towards a ceasefire in Sudan. The U.S. State Department official who oversaw the dismantling of USAID has left the agency after less than 3 months on the job. Under Peter Morocco's watch, over 80% of the U.S. Agency for International Development's programs have been canceled and the bulk of its staff fired. The cuts have already led to deaths in some countries, as health experts warn many more are to be expected due to cuts in essential services, including vaccines and other preventive health care. Last week, the World Food Program called U.S. cuts to emergency food assistance, quote, a death sentence for millions, unquote. In related news, the White House has asked Congress to claw back $9.3 billion of previously approved funding to USAID, public broadcasting, and other programs. That includes $1.1 billion in federal funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a taxpayer-supported company that provides matching funds to broadcasters, including NPR, PBS, and community radio and TV stations. In a statement, the White House accused the broadcasters of spreading, quote, radical woke propaganda disguised as news, unquote. Republican leaders are expected to take up Trump's request for a rescission bill, which needs only a simple majority to pass when lawmakers return from a two-week recess. On Monday, the White House barred Associated Press journalists from covering Trump's Oval Office meeting with El Salvador's president, despite last week's court order forbidding the Trump administration from punishing the AP for refusing to rename the Gulf of Mexico. Meanwhile, Trump has demanded that the FCC revoke CBS's license and impose fines after 60 Minutes aired segments critical of President Trump. Here in New York, jury selection got underway Monday in a retrial of a case brought by former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin, who sued The New York Times and its former editorial page editor for libel. The Times argued in court its editorial falsely linking Palin to a 2011 mass shooting was an honest mistake that was corrected quickly. Employees of the Internal Revenue Service are bracing for mass layoffs, with the Trump administration's reduction of force plans affecting roughly 100,000 IRS workers expected to take effect by the end of the week. The Washington Post reports the cuts could eliminate nearly a quarter of the tax agency's workforce, including the elimination of the Office of Civil Rights and Compliance. An analysis by the humanitarian charity Oxfam America found cuts to the IRS could help the wealthiest taxpayers avoid an additional $30 million in taxes per day on average. Today is the deadline for filing personal income taxes. One IRS worker told CNN, quote, there's going to be a huge backlog, probably worse than it was during COVID, unquote. And Mark Zuckerberg took the stand Monday to defend Meta's dominance in the social media landscape as a highly anticipated antitrust trial kicked off in Washington, D.C. The case was brought by the Federal Trade Commission, which alleges Meta, the parent company of Facebook, created a social media monopoly when it acquired Instagram and WhatsApp. If Meta loses the trial, it could be forced to sell off those platforms. Meta's been under renewed scrutiny in recent weeks as a whistleblower book from a former Facebook public policy director has made international headlines. Meta moved to block the author of Careless People, Sarah Wynne Williams, from promoting her book in the United States. But Meta's efforts to silence Wynne Williams did not prevent her from testifying to a Senate panel last week. Among other things, she revealed how Meta worked with advertisers to target teenage users, including with weight loss and other such products if users displayed signs of body insecurities. She also detailed Meta's use of censorship.
I witnessed Meta work hand in glove with the Chinese Communist Party to construct and test custom-built censorship tools that silenced and censored their critics. When Beijing demanded that Facebook delete the account of a prominent Chinese dissident living on American soil, they did it. And then lied to Congress when asked about the incident in a Senate hearing.
Beautiful. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
On the third evening of the Jewish holiday of Passover, Jewish Voice for Peace held a protest seder outside the New York City immigration offices after ICE seized yet another Palestinian Columbia University student with a green card. Mohsen Madawi, a co-founder of Palestinian Student Union at Columbia with Mahmoud Khalil, also a Palestinian green card holder just like Khalil. These are some of the voices from Monday's night's protest, including the lawyer who represents Khalil and also the Tufts University graduate student Remesa Özturk, who was taken by ICE agents who were masked last month in Somerville, Massachusetts, just outside Tufts. But we begin with a member of Jewish Voice for Peace.
Free Mahmoud! Free them all!
Free Mahmoud! Free them all!
Come to one! Face us all!
Come to one! Face us all!
My name is Marianne Pita. I'm here with the Jewish elders, part of the JVP. I've never been more proud to be Jewish. I've always thought of Passover as a celebration of liberation. And liberation can never be just the Jews, because there's nothing free about being by yourself in some sort of country in battle. The only way to fight for liberation is to fight for everybody, and in this case, the Palestinians.
Come to one! Save us all!
Come to one!
For one of Mahmoud Khalil's tireless attorneys, a law professor at CUNY and the founder of CLEAR, a vital legal clinic that challenges the U.S. security state, Ramzi Qasem.
My client, Rumesa, shared with me and my fellow lawyers representing her that when she was taken by ICE from her campus in Tufts, in the video that I'm sure you've all seen, and she was whisked across state lines by men in plain clothes in an unmarked van. One of these men turned to her, and he said, "We are not monsters." He said, "We're just doing as we're told." So I want to contrast that message with the second message, which is a message of gratitude from Mahmoud, from Yunsar, from Rumesa, and I'm sure all the others whose names you know. The message of gratitude for all of you, because you exemplify the grandest Jewish tradition, the truest Passover tradition. You have stood in solidarity with the Palestinian people as they have faced a genocide. You've stood with Mahmoud, with Rumaysa, with Mohsen, as they face abduction and detention. You're standing with Yunsa as she continues to fight to remain free, because she is still free. And for that, they are deeply, infinitely grateful for all of you.
Please join me in giving a warm welcome to our dear friend who has inspired millions around the world with her conviction and love, the co-founder of Empower Change, Linda Sarsour!
I'm here to say I pray for you all to have a blessed Passover, and just to show my gratitude and at any chance that I get to come and say thank you to you directly, I'm going to do that. In Islam, thanking people is thanking God. And I thank God for you every single day for being on the front lines and saying to this administration, to the one before, and to the Netanyahu administration, not in our name.
My name is Abby Stein. I'm a rabbi here in New York City. I want to talk about Miriam, the cup of Miriam, which is just a cup of water. A tradition that has been added relatively recently, but is very important to so many of us as a feminist tradition. I will say as a queer person, as a queer tradition, but most importantly right now, I think about water, and I think for everyone here, I don't have to tell you what water means to Palestine and to Palestinians, and what occupied water, for the lack of a better term, looks like. I spent this summer in Palestine for a month and saw how that looks like, how you can tell whether something is a settlement or something is an actual Palestinian home based on whether they have access to national water or if they have to collect their own water. So water really is a symbol of occupation and oppression, and for us, it is a symbol of liberation. At the same time, water, Miriam, feminism, and queer liberation is too often used to control people, whether it is the Israeli government and intelligence services threatening gay and lesbian and LGBTQ Palestinians to expose them, so to speak, if they don't cooperate. Or just using us, trans Jews and LGBTQ Jews, as an excuse why they keep killing people, while I have so many queer Palestinian friends who, before we can talk about liberation, just want to live. So right now, as we celebrate Pesach together, as we keep water, as we keep Miriam, as we keep our feminist foremothers, as we keep our queer elders throughout history in mind, this is what Pesach is: liberation for all, whether it is land, water, people, and each and every one of us at home and abroad. Thank you.
That last voice, trans activist Rabbi Abby Stein. Hundreds with Jewish Voice for Peace and others held a protest seder outside New York City immigration offices on Monday. When we come back, we'll see a part of President Trump's meeting with Salvadoran President Nayib Bukele in the Oval Office, along with the Trump, some of members of the cabinet, as Trump defies a Supreme Court order returning a Maryland resident wrongly deported to El Salvador. Stay with us.
We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. Rest until it comes, until the killing of black men, black mothers, sons, is as important as the killing of white men, white mothers, sons.
song by the Resistance Revival Chorus, singing at Monday's Liberation Seder in New York City. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. As we turn to President Trump's unusual Oval Office meeting Monday with President Nayib Bukele of El Salvador, during a long back and forth with the press at which key Trump administration officials and advisors were also present, President Bukele flatly refused to return Kilmara Borrego Garcia to the United States, the Maryland father who was wrongly deported, sent to the notorious Salvadoran prison CECAT. In a tense exchange about Borrego Garcia, several members of Trump's cabinet and team also weighed in. And the message was clear. Despite last week's unanimous Supreme Court ruling that the U.S. government should facilitate Borrego Garcia's return to the United States, President Trump and his cabinet insisted they are not required to do so. We're going to begin by playing this astounding exchange. During the back and forth, President Trump turns to Attorney General Pam Bondi, Homeland Security Advisor Stephen Miller, Secretary of State Marco Rubio. It begins with a question from CNN's Caitlin Collins.
Go ahead. Let's hear the question from this very low-rated anchor at CNN.
Do you plan to ask President Trump to help return the man who your administration says was mistakenly—
Which one is it?
The man who was mistakenly deported to El Salvador.
Well, let me ask Pam, would you answer that question?
Sure, President. First and foremost, he was illegally in our country. He had been illegally in our country. And in 2019, two courts, an immigration court and an appellate immigration court, ruled that he was a member of MS-13 and he was illegally in our country. Right now, it was a paperwork. It was additional paperwork that needed to be done. That's up to El Salvador if they want to return him. That's not up to us. The Supreme Court ruled, President, that if, as El Salvador wants to return him, this is international matters, foreign affairs, if they wanted to return him, we would facilitate it, meaning provide a plane.
So will you return him?
You are doing a great job. Thank you. Wait a minute. Could you just also respond to that question? Because, you know, it's asked by CNN, and they always ask it with a slant. Because they're totally slanted, because they don't know what's happening. That's why nobody's watching them. But would you answer that question also?
Yes, gladly. So, as Pam mentioned, there's an illegal alien from El Salvador. So, with respect to you, he's a citizen of El Salvador. So, it's very arrogant even for American media to suggest that we would even tell El Salvador how to handle their own citizens as a starting point. As two immigration courts found that he was a member of MS-13, when President Trump declared MS-13 to be a foreign terrorist organization, that meant that he was no longer eligible under federal law, which I'm sure you know, you're very familiar with the INA, that he was no longer eligible for any foreign immigration relief in the United States. So he had a deportation order that was valid, which meant that under our law, he's not even allowed to be present in the United States and had to be returned because of the foreign terrorist designation. This issue was then, by a district court judge, completely inverted, and a district court judge tried to tell the administration that they had to kidnap a citizen of El Salvador and fly him back here. That issue was raised to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said the district court order was unlawful, and its main components were reversed 9-0 unanimously, stating clearly that neither Secretary of State nor the President could be compelled by anybody to forcibly retrieve a citizen of El Salvador from El Salvador, who, again, is a member of MS-13, which, as I'm sure you understand, rapes little girls, murders women, murders children, is engaged in the most barbaric activities in the world. And I can promise you, if he was your neighbor, you would move right away.
So you don't plan
but
to ask
the Supreme
for
Court's asking to...
And what was the ruling in the Supreme Court, Steve? Was it 9-0?
Yes, it was a 9-0.
In our favor.
In our favor, against the district court ruling, saying that no district court has the power to compel the foreign policy function of the United States. As Pam said, the ruling solely stated that if this individual, at El Salvador's sole discretion, was sent back to our country, that we could deport him a second time.
Well,
no version of this legally ends up with him ever living here because he is a citizen of El Salvador. That is the president of El Salvador. Your questions about it, per the court, can only be directed to him.
I ask
the
President Bukele weigh in on this? Do you plan to return him?
Well, I can't. I'm Most of them suggested that I smuggle a terrorist into the United States, right? How can I return him to the United States? Like, could I smuggle him into the United States or whatever? Of course, I'm not going to do it. It's like, I mean, the question is preposterous. How can I smuggle a terrorist into the United States? I don't have the power to return him to the United States.
But you could release him inside El Salvador.
Yeah, but I'm not releasing... I mean, we're not very fond of releasing terrorists into our country. We just turned the murder capital of the world into the safest country in the Western Hemisphere, and you want us to go back into the releasing criminals so we can go back to being the murder capital of the world? And that's not going to happen.
Well, they'd love to have a criminal, you know,
there's a fascination.
They would love it.
Yeah.
They're sick. These are sick people. Mark, do you have something to say?
Yeah, I mean, Stephen Island, it,